The Institute for Advanced Consciousness and Spiritual Research presents Power versus Force, An Anatomy of Consciousness, The Hidden Determinants of Human Behavior, read by the author, Dr. David R. Hawkins.
The skillful are not obvious. In fact, they appear to be simple-minded. Those who know this know the patterns of the Absolute. To know the patterns is the subtle power. The subtle power moves all things and has no name.
Foreword, written by E. Whalen, editor, Bard Press, Arizona, 1995. Imagine, what if you had access to a simple yes or no answer to any question you wished to ask? A demonstrably true answer. Any question. Think about it. There's the obvious. Jane is seeing another guy. Yes. No. Johnny is telling the truth about school. Yes. No. But it's only a short step to, this is a safe investment. Yes. No. Or this career is worthy of my pursuit. Yes. No. What if everyone had such access? Staggering implications suggest themselves immediately. Think again. What would happen to our ponderous and all too often flawed judicial system if there were a clear, confirmable answer to the proposition, John Doe is guilty as charged? Yes? No? What would happen to politics as we know it if all of us could ask the question, candidate X honestly intends to fulfill this campaign promise? Yes? No? And all of us got the same answer? And what would happen to advertising, period? You get the idea. But the idea gets bigger fast. What happens to nationalism? Nation X is, in fact, dedicated to the overthrow of democracy, to government. This bill does, in fact, protect the rights of citizens. What happens to the check is in the mail? If, as has been said, man learned to lie an hour after he learned to talk, then a phenomenon such as we are discussing would be the genesis of the most fundamental change in human knowledge since the beginning of society. The transformations it would wreak in fields from communications to ethics, in our most basic concepts, in every detail of daily existence, would be so profound that it is difficult even to conceive what life would be like in a subsequent new era of truth. The world as we know it would be irrevocably changed to its very roots. The study of kinesiology, which is the study of muscles and their movements, especially as applied to physical conditioning, first received scientific attention in the second half of this century through the work of Dr. George Goodhart, who pioneered the specialty he called applied kinesiology after finding that benign physical stimuli, for instance, beneficial nutritional supplements, would increase the strength of certain indicator muscles, whereas inimical stimuli would cause those muscles to suddenly weaken. The implication was that, at a level far below conceptual consciousness, the body knew, and through muscle testing was able to signal what was good and bad for it. The classic example, cited later in this work, is a universally observed weakening of indicator muscles in the presence of a chemical sweetener. The same muscles strengthen in the presence of a healthful, natural supplement. In the late 70s, Dr. John Diamond refined this specialty into a new discipline he called behavioral kinesiology. Dr. Diamond's startling discovery was that indicator muscles would strengthen or weaken in the presence of positive or negative emotional and intellectual stimuli, as well as physical stimuli. A smile will make you test strong. The statement, I hate you, will make you test weak. Before we go any farther, let us explain in detail exactly how one tests, especially as the listener will certainly wish to try this himself. Here is Dr. Diamond's outline from his 1979 book, Your Body Doesn't Lie, of the procedure adapted by him from the classic description in H.O. Kendall's Muscles, Testing and Function. It takes two people to perform a kinesiological test. Choose a friend or family member for testing. We'll call him or her your subject. 1. Have the subject stand erect, right arm relaxed at his side, left arm held out parallel to the floor, elbow straight. You may use the other arm if you wish. 2. Face your subject and place your left hand on his right shoulder to steady him. Then place your right hand on the subject's extended left arm just above the wrist. 3. Tell the subject you are going to push his arm down as he resists with all his strength. 4. Now push down on his arm fairly quickly, firmly, and evenly. The idea is to push just hard enough to test the spring and bounce in the arm, not so hard that the muscle becomes fatigued. It is not a question of who is stronger, but of whether the muscle can lock the shoulder joint against the push. Assuming there is no physical problem with the muscle and the subject is in a normal, relaxed state of mind, receiving no extraneous stimuli, for this reason it is important that the tester not smile or otherwise interact with the subject, the muscle will test strong. The arm will remain locked. If the test is repeated in the presence of a negative stimulus, for instance, artificial sweetener, although you are pushing down no harder than before, the muscle will not be able to resist the pressure, and the subject's arm will fall to his side. A striking aspect of Diamond's research was the uniformity of response among his subjects. Diamond's results were predictable, repeatable, universal. This was so, even where no rational link existed between stimulus and response. For totally undetermined reasons, certain abstract symbols caused all subjects to test weak, others the opposite. Some results were perplexing. Certain pictures, with no overtly positive or negative content, would cause all subjects to test weak, while other neutral pictures caused all subjects to test strong. And some results were food for considerable surmise. Whereas virtually all classical music and most pop music, including classic rock and roll, caused a universally strong response, the hard or metal rock that first gained popularity in the late 70s produced a universally weak response. There was one other phenomenon that Diamond noted in passing, though devoting no deeper analysis to its extraordinary implications. Subjects listening to tapes of known deceits, Lyndon Johnson perpetrating the Tonkin Gulf hoax, Edward Kennedy stonewalling the Chappaquiddick incident, universally tested weak. While listening to recordings of demonstrably true statements, they universally tested strong. This was the starting point of the work of the author of this volume, the well-known psychiatrist and physician, David R. Hawkins. In 1975, Dr. Hawkins began research on the kinesiological response to truth and falsehood. It had been established that test subjects did not need any conscious acquaintance with the substance or issue being tested. In double-blind studies and in mass demonstrations involving entire lecture audiences, subjects universally tested weak in response to unmarked envelopes containing artificial sweetener and strong to identical placebo envelopes. The same naive response appeared in testing intellectual values. What seems to be at work is a form of communal consciousness, spiritus mundi, or as Hawkins calls it following Jung, a database of consciousness. The phenomenon, seen so commonly in other social animals, whereby a fish swimming at one edge of a school will turn instantaneously when its fellows a quarter mile away flee a predator, pertains in some subconscious way to our species also. There are simply too many documented instances of individuals having intimate acquaintance with information experienced firsthand by remote strangers for us to deny that there are forms of shared knowledge other than those achieved by rational consciousness. Or perhaps, more simply, the same spark of inner subrational wisdom that can discriminate healthy from unhealthy can discriminate true from false. One highly suggestive element of this phenomenon is the binary nature of the response. Hawkins found that questions must be phrased so that the answer is very clearly yes or no, like a nerve synapse that is on or off, like the most basic cellular forms of knowledge. Like so much of what our cutting-edge physicists tell us is the essential nature of universal energy. Is the human brain at some primal level a wondrous computer linked with a universal energy field that knows far more than it knows? Be that as it may. As Dr. Hawkins' research continued, his most fertile discovery was a means of calibrating a scale of relative truth by which intellectual positions, statements, or ideologies could be rated on a range of 1 to 1,000. One can ask, this item, book, philosophy, teacher, calibrates at 200. Yes, no. At 250. Yes, no. And so on, until the point of common weak response determines the calibration. The enormous implication of these calibrations was that for the first time in human history, ideological validity could be appraised as an innate quality in any subject. Through 20 years of similar calibrations, Hawkins was able to analyze the full spectrum of the levels of human consciousness, developing a fascinating map of the geography of man's experience. This anatomy of consciousness produces a profile of the entire human condition, allowing a comprehensive analysis of the emotional and spiritual development of individuals, societies, and the race in general. So profound and far-reaching a view provides not only a new understanding of man's journey in the universe, but also a guide to all of us as to where we and our neighbors are on the ladder of spiritual enlightenment and on our own personal journeys to become who we could be. In this volume, Dr. Hawkins brings these fruits of decades of research and insight into the penetrating illumination of revolutionary discoveries in advanced particle physics and nonlinear dynamics. For the first time in our Western intellectual record, he shows the cold light of science is confirming what mystics and saints have always said about the self, God, and the very nature of reality. This vision of being, essence, and divinity presents a picture of man's relation to the universe that is unique in its capacity to satisfy both soul and reason. There is a rich intellectual and spiritual harvest here, much that you can take and much more that you can give yourself. Continue listening. The future starts now. Preface.
To explain that which is simple can be difficult indeed. Much of this book is devoted to the process of making the simple obvious. If we can understand even one simple thing in depth, we will have greatly expanded our capacity for comprehending the nature of the universe and of life itself. Kinesiology is now a well-established science based on testing of an all-or-none muscle response to stimuli. A positive stimulus provokes a strong muscle response. A negative stimulus results in a demonstrable weakening of the test muscle. Clinical kinesiologic muscle testing has found widespread verification over the last 25 years. Goodhart's original research on the subject was given wider application by Dr. John Diamond, whose books brought the subject to the public. Diamond determined that this positive or negative response occurs with stimuli, both physical and mental. The research reflected in this volume has taken Dr. Diamond's technique several steps further through the discovery that this kinesiologic response reflects a capacity of the human organism to differentiate not only positive from negative stimuli, but also anabolic, meaning life-enhancing, from catabolic, meaning life-consuming, and most dramatically, true from false. The test itself is simple, rapid, and relatively foolproof. A positive muscle reaction occurs in response to a statement which is objectively true. A negative response occurs if the test subject is presented with a false statement. This phenomenon occurs independently of the test subject's own opinion or knowledge of the topic, and the response has proven cross-culturally valid in many populations and consistent throughout time. The test results thus fulfill the scientific requirement of replication and therefore reliable verification by other investigators. This technique provides, for the first time in human history, an objective basis for distinguishing truth from falsehood, which is totally verifiable across time with randomly selected naive test subjects. Moreover, we found that this testable phenomenon can be used to calibrate human levels of consciousness so that an arbitrary logarithmic scale of whole numbers emerges, stratifying the relative power of levels of consciousness in all areas of human experience. Exhaustive investigation has resulted in a calibrated scale of consciousness in which the log of whole numbers from 1 to 1,000 calibrates the degree of power of all possible levels of human awareness. The millions of calibrations which confirm this discovery further disclose the stratification of levels of power in human affairs, revealing a remarkable distinction between power and force and their respective qualities. This in turn led to a comprehensive reinterpretation of human behavior in order to identify the invisible energy fields that control it. The calibrated scale was found to coincide with sublevels of the hierarchy of the perennial philosophy, correlations with emotional and intellectual phenomena in sociology, clinical psychology, psychoanalysis, and traditional spirituality, which immediately suggested themselves. The calibrated scale has been examined here in light of current discoveries in advanced theoretical physics and the nonlinear dynamics of chaos theory. Calibrated levels, we suggest, represent powerful attractor fields within the domain of consciousness itself that dominate human existence and therefore define content, meaning, and value, and serve as organizing energies for widespread patterns of human behavior. This stratification of attractor fields according to corresponding levels of consciousness provides a new paradigm for recontextualizing the human experience throughout all time, practically by accessing data to which there has been heretofore no avenue of approach. Our method promises both great value in researching history and enormous possible benefit for man's future. In attempting to emphasize the value of this technique as a research tool, examples have been given of its potential uses in the wide range of human activities, such as in art, history, commerce, politics, medicine, sociology, the natural sciences, and pragmatically in marketing, advertising, research and development, and empirically in psychological, philosophic, and religious spiritual inquiry. Specific applications have been suggested in such diverse fields as criminology, intelligence, addictionology, and the whole field of self-improvement. But further uses and extrapolations of the research method detailed have been barely hinted at. Although the results described here are the product of 20 years of investigation and literally millions of calibrations on thousands of subjects by teams of investigators, this book represents only a beginning exploration of the method's potential to enhance our knowledge in all the arts and sciences. Perhaps most important is its promise as an aid in spiritual growth and maturation to the most advanced levels of consciousness, even enlightenment itself. By use of the kinesiologic testing procedure described herein, unlimited information about any subject, past or present, is universally available. But the realization that everything is knowable about anything or anyone, anywhere, at any point in time, creates at first a paradigm shock. This reaction arises generally from realization of the non-locality, impersonality, and universality of consciousness itself, and, specifically, from the realization of the observability of one's own thoughts and motivations and their transparency across time, that one's every thought and action leave an indelible trace forever in the universe can be an unsettling thought. As in the case of the discovery of radio waves or X-rays, a sudden expansion of our awareness of the workings of the universe not only allows but demands a recontextualization of our worldview. Implications of new knowledge require a reworking of old ideas to form a larger context. Though it may occasion some intellectual stress, Such scientific recontextualization of human behavior can expose the basic structures that underline personal and social problems, thereby revealing their potential solutions. Because this subject matter is, in fact, extraordinarily simple, it is difficult to present in a world enamored of complexity. Despite our mistrust of simplification, we may see two general classes of people in the world, believers and non-believers. To the non-believers, everything is false until proven true. To the believers, everything said in good faith is probably true, unless it is proven false. The pessimistic position of cynical skepticism stems from fear. The more optimistic manner of accepting information arises from self-confidence. Either style works, and each has its pros and cons. I have been faced, therefore, with the problem of presenting the data in a manner that will satisfy both approaches. This book is therefore oxymoronic in style, written to facilitate both so-called left and right brain comprehension. In actuality, we know things by a holistic pattern recognition. The easiest way to grasp a whole new concept is simply by familiarity. This kind of understanding is encouraged by a style of writing characterized as closure. Instead of using only sparse adjectives or examples to express thoughts, they are instead run out and completed by use of repetition. The concept is then done, and the mind is left at ease. Such an approach is also desirable because the mind that reads Chapter 3 will not be the same as the mind that reads Chapter 1. For that matter, the idea of having to start from Chapter 1 and read progressively to the end is merely a fixed left-brain concept. This is the pedestrian path of Newtonian physics, based on a limited and limiting view of the world, in which all events supposedly happen in a sequence A causes B causes C. This form of myopia arises from an outdated paradigm of reality. Our wider and far more comprehensive view draws not only upon the essence of the most advanced physics, mathematics, and nonlinear theory, but as well upon intuitions that can be experientially validated by anyone. In general, the challenge in presenting this material lies in the paradox of comprehending nonlinear concepts in a linear sentence-by-sentence structure. The fields of science from which the data emerged are of themselves complex and difficult enough, such as advanced theoretical physics and the mathematics thereof, nonlinear dynamics, chaos theory and its mathematics, advanced behavioral kinesiology, neurobiology, turbulence theory, as well as the philosophic considerations of epistemology and ontology. Beyond this, it was necessary to address the nature of human consciousness itself, an uncharted area at the perimeter of which the sciences have all drawn back. To conclusively comprehend such subjects from a purely intellectual viewpoint would be a staggering enterprise requiring a lifetime of study. Instead of essaying so formidable a task, I have tried to extract the essence of each subject and work only with these essences. Even a rudimentary attempt to explain the workings of the testing technique fundamental to this book, which seems initially to transcend known laws of the universe, inevitably leads us into the intellectual territories of advanced theoretical physics, nonlinear dynamics, and chaos theory. I have therefore attempted as much as possible to present these subjects in non-technical terms. There is no need to worry that some erudite intellectual capacity is required to digest this material. It is not. We will circle around the same concepts over and over until they are obvious. Each time we return to comment on an example, greater comprehension will occur. This kind of learning is like surveying new terrain in an airplane. On the first pass, it all looks unfamiliar. The second time around, we spot some points of reference. The third time, it starts to make sense. And we finally gain familiarity through simple exposure. The inborn pattern recognition mechanism of the mind takes care of the rest. To quell my own fear that perhaps, despite my best efforts, the reader might not get the essential message of the study, I will spell it out in advance. The individual human mind is like a computer terminal connected to a giant database. The database is human consciousness itself, of which our own consciousness is merely an individual expression, but with its roots in the common consciousness of all of mankind. This database is the realm of genius. Because to be human is to participate in the database, everyone by virtue of his birth has access to genius. The unlimited information contained in the database has now been shown to be readily available to anyone in a few seconds, at any time, and in any place. This is indeed an astonishing discovery, bearing the power to change lives, both individually and collectively, to a degree never yet anticipated. The database transcends time and space and all limitations of individual consciousness. This distinguishes it as a unique tool for future research and opens as yet undreamed of areas for possible investigation. It holds forth the prospect of the establishment of an objective basis for human values, behaviors, and belief systems. The information obtained by this method reveals a new context for understanding human behavior and a new paradigm for validating objective truth. Because the technique itself can be used by integrous people anywhere at any time, it has the capacity to initiate a new era of human experience based on observable and verifiable truth. We have at our fingertips a means of accurately distinguishing truth from falsehood, workable from unworkable, benevolent from malign. We can illuminate the hidden forces hitherto overlooked that determine human behavior. We have at our disposal a means of finding answers to previously unresolvable personal and social problems. Falsehood need no longer hold sway over our lives. We might add, which is not in the original book, that subsequent research indicated that only people who themselves calibrate 200 or over are able to obtain accurate test results. Although the subject matter has proven easy to teach in lecture or videotapes, my problem has been to work it into readable form. The proofs can be complex. The demonstrations, however, are ultra simple. Children get it right away and follow through with delight. There's nothing that is surprising to them. They have always known they were connected to the database, and we adults have merely forgotten it. The inherent genius of the child is close to the surface, which is why it was children who saw that the emperor was not wearing new clothes. Genius is like that. I will have been successful if by the end of the book you exclaim, "Oh, I always knew that." What is contained herein is only a reflection of that which you already know, but don't know that you know. All I have hoped to do here is connect the dots to let the hidden picture emerge. This book makes a huge promise, perhaps the biggest promise that has ever been made to you. It can provide you the means by which you may detect if you are being misled. Therefore, you never need read a book or buy into any major teaching again without testing it first. It's too dangerous and too costly. The level of truth of this work itself has been calibrated at 750, which is unusually high for this time in this culture. I pray that this is already a partial fulfillment of the promise. My hope as author has been that this work might undo the very sources of pain, suffering, and failure, and assist the evolution of human consciousness in each of us to rise to the level of joy that should be the essence of man's experience. The work presented by this book began in January 1965. It was finally finished in June 1994. Much of the material was originally developed in the course of work on a doctoral dissertation. The findings reported in the study were independently derived by the use of the research tool elucidated herein, the kinesiologic response. The work evolved spontaneously with reference to outside sources of information. Correlation with the work of others was incorporated at a later date to provide an intellectual frame of reference. Much of the work in this study has now been corroborated by worldwide research presented in independent studies, such as the first major conference on consciousness, entitled Towards a Scientific Basis for Consciousness, which was held at the University of Arizona Health Sciences Center, Tucson, Arizona, in April of 1994. Our research teams used the testing method described in the book to calibrate the levels of truth of every chapter, paragraph, and sentence. For instance, testing revealed an error in a list of celebrities who were destroyed themselves as a consequence of their fame. When we checked each word, the name John Lennon was found to be an error. In fact, he was shot by an assassin. When his name was deleted, the level of truth of the sentence, and therefore the paragraph and the page, rose to match that of the rest of the chapter. Preliminary versions of the book were circulated among selected readers, from rank-and-file healthcare workers to heads of state, such as Mikhail Gorbachev, Nobel winners. Some comments appear on the back cover. Each person's response to the presentation of the subject has been unique. One interesting fact observed was that the scores of tested individuals increased after encountering the material. It appears that mere exposure to the data raised the subject's level of consciousness. Because the implications and practical applications of the work are so varied, and any aspect of the material can be expanded and focused to suit the interests of a given audience, portions of it have lent themselves clinically to presentations for various special interest groups. A segment of the material was presented by the author in the keynote speech at the first International Conference on Consciousness and Addictions in San Mateo, California, and in summation was published in the proceedings of that conference by the Brookridge Institute in the book Beyond Addictions, Beyond Boundaries. An expanded version was given in a 4-hour videotaped lecture on consciousness and addictions at the Second National Conference on Consciousness and Addictions in San Francisco in 1987. Other parts of the material have appeared in previous series of nationally published videotapes, such as Handling Major Crisis, Cardiovascular and Heart Disease, Depression, Alcoholism, Spiritual First Aid, The Aging Process, Pain and Suffering, Weight, Worry, Fear and Anxiety, Health, Illness, Special Relationships, and Sexuality. Some of this material was presented during 3-hour weekly lectures given in an alcohol and drug rehab center over a 5-year period at the Sedona Villa of Camelback Hospital. This is the first time the anatomy of consciousness itself has been delineated in pure form in its entirety, without attenuation to the interests of a specific special interest audience. Written at the Institute for Advanced Theoretical Research in 1995.
Introduction.
All human endeavor has the common unstated goal of understanding or influencing human experience. To this end, man has developed numerous descriptive and analytic disciplines, such as morality, philosophy, psychology, and so forth. Staggering amounts of time and money are invested in data collection and analysis in attempts to predict human trends. Implicit in this frenetic search is the expectation of finding some ultimate answer. The answer, we seem perennially to believe, will, once found, allow us to solve the problems of the economy or crime, national health or politics, etc. But so far, we have solved none. It isn't that we lack data. We are virtually drowning in data. The obstacle is that we do not have the proper tools to interpret the significance of our data. We have not yet asked the right questions because we have not had an adequate gauge of our questions' relevance or accuracy. Man's dilemma, now and always, has been that he misidentifies his own intellectual artifacts as reality. But these artificial suppositions are merely the products of an arbitrary point of perception. The inadequacy of the answers we receive is a direct consequence of the limitations implicit in the viewpoints of the questioner. Slight errors in the formation of questions result in gross errors in the answers that follow. Understanding does not proceed simply from examining data. It comes from examining data in a particular context. Data is useless until we know what it means. To understand its meaning, we need not only to ask the right questions, but we also need the appropriate instruments with which to measure the data in a meaningful process of sorting and description. Most of human behavior has remained indecipherable despite all attempts to understand it in depth. The systems we have created to achieve understanding may seem extensive and impressive, but each in turn has led us down a blind alley because of limitations inherent in the original design. As we explore the nature of man's problems, it becomes clear that there has never been a reliable experimental yardstick with which to measure and interpret man's motivations and experiences over the course of history. Philosophy, in all of its branches, attempts to comprehend human experience by creating abstractions and hypothecating their concordance with some ultimate reality. Political systems are all based on suppositions about relative human values, lacking any demonstrable factual basis. All systems of morality resolve into arbitrary attempts to reduce the enormous complexity of human behavior to simplistic categories of right or wrong. Psychoanalysis, in exposing the unconscious mind, has compounded this muddle, giving rise to a bewildering array of treatments and psychologies derived from various viewpoints. This ongoing babble of man's attempt to understand himself finally produces a semantic morass in which, in the end, anything one might say is probably true to some degree. Because of uncertainty about the exact nature of causality, even when measurable results are obtained, they are subject to being ascribed to fictitious causes. The fatal fault of all thought systems has been primarily, number one, failure to differentiate between subjective and objective. Number two, disregard of the limitation of context inherent in basic design and terminology. Three, ignorance of the nature of consciousness itself. And four, misunderstanding of the nature of causality. The consequences of these shortcomings will become obvious as we explore the major areas of human experience from a new perspective with new tools. Society constantly expends its efforts to correct defects instead of causes, which is one reason why the evolution of human consciousness proceeds so slowly. Mankind is really barely on the first rung of the ladder. We haven't yet solved even such primitive problems as world hunger. The accomplishments of mankind thus far, in fact, are most impressive for having been achieved almost blindly through trial and error. While this random search for solutions has resulted in a maze of baffling complexity, true answers always have the hallmark of simplicity. The basic law of the universe is economy. The universe does not waste a single quark. All serves a purpose and fits into a balance. There are no extraneous events. Man is stuck with his lack of knowledge about himself until he can learn to look beyond apparent causes. From the human record, we may note that answers never arise from identifying so-called causes in the world. Instead, it is necessary to identify the conditions that underlie these ostensible causes, and these conditions exist only within man's consciousness itself. No definitive answer to any problem can be found by isolating sequences of events and projecting upon them a mental notation called causality. There are no actual causes within the observable world. As we shall demonstrate, the observable world is a world of effects. What is the human prognosis? Is society, by virtue of its own chaotic subsystems, a runaway juggernaut inherently doomed? This prospect underlies a general social apprehension about the future. International polls indicate a high level of unhappiness everywhere on the globe, even in the most advanced countries. While the majority resign themselves to a pessimistic view and pray for a better life in the hereafter, the few visionaries who foresee a utopian future are unable to describe the means necessary to bring it about. Society needs visionaries of means, not dreamers of ends. Once we have the means, the ends will reveal themselves. The difficulty in finding effective means reduces itself upon examination to be our inability to discriminate the essential from the non-essential. Thus far, there has been no system offering a method by which to distinguish powerful and effective solutions from weak, ineffective ones. Our means of evaluation themselves have been inherently incapable of performing realistic appraisal. Societal choices, more often than not, are the result of expediency, statistical fallacy, sentiment, political or media pressure, or personal prejudice and vested interest. Crucial decisions affecting the lives of everyone on the planet are made under conditions that virtually guarantee failure. Because societies lack the necessary reality base for formulation of effective problem resolutions, they fall back over and over on a resort to force in its various expressions, such as law, taxation, war, rules, regulations, etc., which is extremely costly, instead of employing power, which is very economical. Man has two basic types of operational faculties, reason and feeling. Both are inherently unreliable, as history, a precarious individual and collective survival, attests. Although we ascribe our actions to reason, in fact, man operates primarily out of pattern recognition. The logical arrangement of data serves mainly to enhance a pattern recognition system, which then becomes so-called truth. But nothing is ever actually true except under certain circumstances, and then only from a particular viewpoint, characteristically unstated. As a result, thoughtful man deduces that all his problems arise from the difficulty of knowingness. Ultimately, the mind arrives at epistemology, which is that branch of philosophy which examines the question of how and to what degree man really knows anything. Such philosophic discussions may either seem erudite or irrelevant, but the questions they pose are at the very core of human experience. No matter where we start in an examination of human knowledge, we always end up looking at the phenomena of awareness and the nature of human consciousness, and we eventually come to the same realization. Any further advance in man's condition requires a verifiable basis of knowingness upon which we may place our trust. The main obstacle to man's development, then, is the lack of knowledge about the nature of consciousness itself. If we look within ourselves at the instant-by-instant processes of our minds, we will soon notice that the mind acts much more rapidly than we would acknowledge. It becomes apparent that the notion that our actions are based on thoughtful decisions is a grand illusion. The decision-making process is a function of consciousness itself. With enormous rapidity, the mind makes choices based on millions of pieces of data and their correlations and projections far beyond conscious comprehension. This is a global function dominated by the energy patterns, which the new science of nonlinear dynamics terms attractors. Consciousness automatically chooses what it deems best from instant to instant, because that is ultimately the only function of which it is really capable. The relative weight and merit given to certain data are determined by a predominant attractor pattern operating in the individual or in a collective group of minds. These patterns can be identified, described, and calibrated. Out of that information arises a totally new understanding of human behavior, history, and the potential destiny of mankind. The present volume, the result of 20 years of intensive research involving millions of calibrations, can make such understanding available to anyone. That this revelation proceeds from a fortuitous connection between the physiology of consciousness, the function of the human nervous system, and the physics of the universe is not surprising when we remind ourselves that we are, after all, part of a universe in which everything is connected to everything else. All its secrets are thus, theoretically at least, available to us if we know where and how to look. Can man lift himself up by his bootstraps? Why not? All he has to do is increase his buoyancy, and he will effortlessly rise to a higher state. Force cannot accomplish that feat. Power not only can, but constantly does. Man thinks he lives by virtue of the forces he can control, but in fact he is governed by power from unrevealed sources, power over which he has no control. Because power is effortless, it goes unseen and unsuspected. Force is experienced through the senses. Power can be recognized only through inner awareness. Man is immobilized by his present condition, by his alignment with enormously powerful attractor energy patterns, which he himself unconsciously sets in motion. Moment by moment, he is suspended in this state of evolution, restrained by the energies of force, impelled by the energies of power. The individual is thus like a cork in the sea of consciousness. He doesn't know where he is, where he came from, where he is going, and he doesn't know why. Man wanders about in this endless conundrum, asking the same questions century after century, and so he will continue, feeling a quantum leap in consciousness. One mark of such a sudden expansion of context and understanding is an inner experience of relief, joy, and awe. All who have had such an experience feel afterwards that the universe has granted them a precious gift. Facts are accumulated by effort, but truth reveals itself effortlessly. Hopefully, through this book, the reader can comprehend and then prepare the conditions for such a personal revelation. To do so is the ultimate adventure.
Part 1. Tools. Chapter 1. critical advances in knowledge.
The evolution of this work, which began in 1965, was fostered by developments in numerous scientific fields, of which three were of special importance: clinical research on the physiology of the nervous system and the holistic functioning of the human organism resulted in the development in the 1970s of the new science of kinesiology. Meanwhile, in the technical arena, computers were being designed that were capable of millions of calculations in milliseconds, making possible the new tools of artificial intelligence. This abrupt access to formerly inconceivable masses of data begot a revolutionary perspective on natural phenomena, chaos theory. Simultaneously, in the theoretical sciences, quantum mechanics led to advanced theoretical physics. Through associated mathematics, there emerged a whole new study of nonlinear dynamics, one of the most far-reaching developments of modern science, the long-term impact of which has yet to be realized. Kinesiology, for the first time, exposed the intimate connection between mind and body, revealing that the mind thinks with the body itself. Thence, it provided an avenue for the exploration of the ways consciousness reveals itself in the subtle mechanisms behind disease processes. Advanced computers, permitting the depiction through graphics of vast amounts of data, disclosed unsuspected systems within what had been ignored by Newtonian physics as indecipherable or meaningless chaotic data. Theoreticians in diverse fields were suddenly able to intimate coherent ways of understanding that had been considered incoherent or nonlinear, diffuse, or chaotic, and therefore inaccessible through conventional probabilistic logical theory and mathematics. Analysis of this seemingly incoherent data identified hidden energy patterns or attractors, which had been postulated by the advanced mathematics of nonlinear equations, and these existed behind apparently random natural phenomena. Computer graphics clearly demonstrated the designs of these attractor fields. The implicit potential for analyzing supposedly unpredictable systems in such disparate areas as fluid mechanics, human biology, and stellar astronomy appeared to be limitless. The public, however, had remained generally unaware of this new field of nonlinear dynamics, except for the appearance in the marketplace of some intriguing new computer graphics generated by fractal geometry. During the era preceding these revelations, however, linear science had grown progressively divorced from concern with the basis of life itself. All life processes are, in fact, nonlinear. This isolation was also characteristic of medicine, which, when presented with the amazing discoveries of kinesiology, merely ignored the information because it had no context, no paradigm of reality with which to comprehend it. Medicine had forgotten that it was an art and that science was merely a tool of that art. Within medicine, psychiatry had always been held at a distance by the traditionalists because it dealt with the immeasurables of human life and therefore appeared less seemingly scientific from the Newtonian viewpoint. Academic psychiatry, in fact, has made major scientific breakthroughs in psychopharmacology since at least the 1950s. However, it remains the most nonlinear area of medicine, examining such subjects as intuition, decision-making, and the whole phenomena of life as process. Although in the academic psychiatric literature there is little mention of such things as love, meaning, value, or will, the psychiatric discipline at least essays a somewhat larger view of man than other traditional medical fields. Regardless of what branch of inquiry one starts from, whether it is philosophy, political theory, theology, etc., all avenues of investigation eventually converge at a common meeting point, the quest for an organized understanding of the nature of pure consciousness. But all of the major enterprises in human knowledge discussed, even kinesiology and nonlinear dynamics, halted at this last great barrier to human knowledge, the investigation of the nature of consciousness itself. Some advanced thinkers, it is true, went beyond the parameters of their respective fields and began to ask questions about the relationship between the universe, science, and consciousness in its experience as mind. We will refer to their theories and their impact on the advance of human understanding as we proceed. The thesis of the present work derives from amalgamating these several scientific disciplines into a methodology both elegantly simple and rewarding. We have found thereby that consciousness can indeed be investigated. Although no roadmaps for such a study have thus far been available, research into the subject has produced its own design, and with it the context needed to comprehend its findings. Inasmuch as everything in the universe is connected with everything else, it is not surprising that one of the primary objectives of this study, a map of the energy fields of consciousness, would correlate with and be corroborated by all other avenues of investigation, and thereby uniting the diversity of human experience and its expressions in an all-encompassing paradigm. Such an insight can bypass the artificial dichotomy between subject and object, transcending the limited viewpoint that creates the illusion of duality. The subjective and objective are, in fact, one and the same, as can be demonstrated without resort to nonlinear equations or computer graphics. Although no roadmaps for such a study have thus far been available, research into the subject has produced its own design, and with it, the context needed to comprehend its own findings. By identifying subjective and objective as the same, we are able to transcend the constraints of the concept of time, which by its very definition is a major hindrance to comprehension of the nature of life, especially in its expression as human experience. If in actuality the so-called subjective and objective are really one and the same, then we can find the answers to all questions by merely looking within man himself. By simply recording observations, we can see a grand picture emerge, one that predicates no limitations to the extent of further investigation. All of us have available to us at all times a computer, far more advanced than the most elaborate artificial intelligence machine, the human mind itself. The basic function of any measuring device is simply to give a signal indicating the detection by the instrument of a slight change. In the experiments to be described, the reactions of the human body itself provide such a signal of change in conditions. As will be seen, the body can discern to the finest degree the difference between that which is supportive of life and that which is not. We should not be surprised at this. Living things all react to what is life supportive and what is not. This is the fundamental mechanism of survival. Inherent in all life forms is the capacity to detect change and react correctively. Thus, trees become smaller at higher elevations as the oxygen in the atmosphere becomes scarcer. Human protoplasm is far more sensitive than that of a tree. The methodology proceeding from the study of nonlinear dynamics, which we employed in this work of developing a map of the fields of human consciousness, is known as attractor research. It is concerned with the identification of power ranges of energy fields utilizing critical point analysis. Critical point analysis is a technique derived from the fact that in any highly complex system, there is a specific critical point at which the smallest input will result in the greatest change. The great gears of a windmill can be halted by lightly touching the right escape mechanism. It is possible to paralyze a giant locomotive if you know exactly where to put your finger. Nonlinear dynamics enables these significant patterns to be identified in complex presentations, even when they are obscured by incoherence or sheer mass of indecipherable data. It discovers the relevance in what the world discards as irrelevant. Using an entirely different approach and totally different methods of problem resolution from the ones the world is used to. The world conventionally assumes that the processing of problems requires starting from the known, such as the question or conditions, and moving on to the unknown, the so-called answer, in a time sequence following definite steps and logical progression. Nonlinear dynamics moves in the opposite direction, from the unknown, the non-deterministic data of the question, to the known, which is the answer. It operates within a different paradigm of causality. The problem is seen as one of definition and excess, rather than of logical sequence, as in solving a problem by the differential equations. But before we attempt to define the questions of this study further, Let us examine some of the material we have introduced in greater detail.
Critical advances in knowledge. Continued. Attractors. At this point, you can review the picture of Lorenz's butterfly.
Attractor is the name given to an identifiable pattern that emerges from a seemingly unmeaningful mass of data. There is a hidden coherence in all that appears incoherent. This inner coherence was first demonstrated in nature by Lorenz in studying computer graphics derived from weather patterns over long courses of time. The attractor pattern he identified is now quite famous as Lorenz's butterfly. Different types of attractors are denoted by different names, for instance, strange attractors. But most important to our research is the discovery that some patterns are very powerful and others are much weaker. There is a critical point which differentiates the two distinct classes. This phenomenon is parallel and corollary to the high and low energy bonds in the mathematics of the chemical bond.
Fields of dominance.
A field of dominance is exhibited by high energy patterns and their influence over weaker ones. This may be likened to the coexistence of a small magnetic field within the much larger, more powerful field of a giant electromagnet. The phenomenologic universe is the expression of the interaction of endless attractor patterns of varying strengths. The unending complexities of life are the reflections of the endless reverberations of the augmentations and diminutions of these fields, compounded by their harmonics and other interactions.
Critical point analysis.
The traditional Newtonian concept of causality had excluded all such non-deterministic data because it did not fit into its paradigm. With the discoveries of Einstein, Heisenberg, Bell, Bohr, and others, our model of the universe expanded rapidly. Advanced theoretical physics demonstrated that everything in the universe is subtly dependent and interactive with everything else. The classic Newtonian four-dimensional universe is often described as a giant clockworks, with the three dimensions of space manifesting linear processes in time. As we look at an even simpler clockworks, we will notice that some gears move slowly and ponderously, while others move very rapidly, and tiny balances twirl about as escape mechanisms as they seesaw back and forth. To place pressure on one of the large moving gears would have little effect on the mechanism. However, somewhere there is a delicate balance mechanism, at which point the slightest touch stops the entire device. This is identified as the critical point, where the least force exerts the greatest effect.
Causality.
Within the observable world, causality has conventionally been presumed to work in the manner of A causes B causes C. This is called a deterministic linear sequence, like billiard balls sequentially striking each other. The implicit presumption is that A causes B causes C. But our own research indicates that causality operates in a completely different manner, in which the complex ABC splits through its operands and is expressed instead as the seeming sequence A and then B and then C of perception. From this diagram, we can see that the source, ABC, which is unobservable, results in the visible sequence of A-B-C, which is an observable phenomena within the measurable three-dimensional world. The typical problems the world attempts to deal with exist on the observable level of A-B-C, but our work is to find the inherent attractor pattern, the ABC, out of which the A then B then C seems to arise. So the attractor pattern, ABC, operates then, split through operants, into the sequence of observable events called separately A-B-C. In this simple diagram, the operants transcend both the observable and the non-observable. We might picture them as a rainbow bridging the deterministic and the non-deterministic realms. The existence of so-called operants can be inferred by asking the question, what encompasses both the possible and the impossible, the known and the unknown? In other words, what is the matrix of all possibilities? This description of how the universe works is in accord with the theories of physicist David Bohm, who has described the holographic universe with an invisible implicate enfolded and a manifest explicate unfolded order. But it is most important to note that this scientific insight corresponds with the view of reality experienced through history by enlightened sages who have evolved beyond